Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin, reminding you that you can be a part of the discussion each and every day. Follow me on Twitter at Al Martin, WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports. Or email me at almartin@wkar. We love to hear from you guys. We had an overwhelming response from you all yesterday, and we encourage that each and every day. So, I want to thank you all who called in, of course, and to weigh in on yesterday's NBA Finals debate. And boy, I tell you, I think today's new motto is, if you talk about LeBron James, they will come. Because you all certainly had much to say, and we appreciate the input. I also want to thank all of you for giving us feedback on this week's topic of homosexuality in sports. Certainly a topic that immediately sparks up a conversation, and we had two great guests in Don Hubbard, co-founder of Rainbow Bowling out in Ann Arbor, and also Rob Copeland, co-founder of Ann Arbor Queer Aquatics. So moving on now, we have a very special guest with us on today's Current Sports. The man has been coaching the game of basketball for some years now within the Lansing area, specifically over at East Lansing High School. Now, he's such a great guy, class act, one of the very first coaches I met when I started covering sports in the area. Ladies and gents, welcome East Lansing boys basketball coach Steve Fenimore to the show. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Al. It's a pleasure to be here, man, and congratulations on your new show. I know this is my first appearance, and it's definitely a pleasure to be here.
Hey, thanks a lot, Steve, for coming on the show. Always a pleasure to just to talk to you, man. So first of all, Steve, you've been very busy throughout this summer so far. Well, the summer's not even here yet officially, but even in the offseason that school has gotten out, you've been a very busy man holding a lot of camps. One of the camps, actually, I spoke at last week. Great group of kids. I mean, talk about the camps you have going on right now. You are one busy man.
Well, I'll tell you, Al, it's gotten to the point in sports where, let's take basketball, for instance, if you have, you know, the notion of playing in college, you really have to play all year round, whether it's on a team, whether it's working out. And, you know, as soon as our season's over in March, you know, kids take a few weeks off. Some kids run track and field. And then they get right back in the gym with workouts and our camp, our summer league. We also go to team camp, which is up at Michigan State this weekend, and then right. We'll go to Spring Arbor next weekend. So, you know, we like to say never an off season, Al.
Gotcha. So when you talk about these camps and summer camps and whatnot, so this is primarily focusing on those individuals and kids who want to play ball at the next level, right?
It really does, Al. You know, a friend of mine gave me a quote a couple of weeks ago pertaining to basketball, Al. He said, scholarships are won in the summertime and championships are won in the wintertime. And what he meant by that was the summertime is when you get your exposure out because you go to these AAU camps, you go to team camps where you can play multiple games and college coaches can be in attendance to watch you play during the month of July.
Right.
And like when we go up to Michigan State, you know, this weekend, you go down to Spring Arbor, the coaches get a chance to see the kids play where, Al, during the winter, it's very hard for coaches to get out and watch your high school team play.
Right, definitely. I can just imagine, man. Now, Steve, a lot of kids right now, they just got out of school, relaxing, maxing and relaxing, kicking
yep.
the breeze. Why is it so important? Like you said, you touch on the offseason in these camps. Why is it so important for you as a coach and your players to kind of, don't you guys kind of bond over this time as well?
We sure do, Al. It's a great chance to welcome in the new players, you know, the ninth graders, the sophomores who are going to be juniors. I get a chance now to interact with them on a daily basis. The MHSAA allows you 15 competitive days in the month of June, mm-hmm. and that consists of the team camps, you know, the shootouts, the summer leagues, and the practices. You know, the last couple of nights we've been on the floor at the high school working on nothing but fundamentals. We don't scrimmage during our practices. We just work on dribbling and shooting.
Oh, gotcha. So no scrimmages between one another.
Right, no doubt.
Gotcha. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Steve Fenimore, head basketball coach, boys basketball coach, that is, over at East Lansing High School. So for you, Steve, what's the biggest lesson you want your kids to take away from camp?
Probably how to be a great teammate. You know, a lot of kids say they want to be a good teammate or they want to be a teammate. But, Al, the one message that I've been trying to get across to our kids at East Lansing, it's similar to the San Antonio Spurs blueprint. You know, be a great teammate. Don't care who gets the credit. Don't care who scores the points.
Right.
You know, share the ball. Play with a lot of energy, Al. And most of all, don't point fingers when something goes wrong.
Right. That's a great, great lesson. Of course, we're going to get into that to the San Antonio Spurs in just a sec. I want to get your take on the NBA Finals. But, Steve, you and I have talked constantly about not only making sure that these kids are successful on the basketball court, but off it as well. Now, what values and things do you try to teach them in order to inspire them in just this thing called life?
You know, Al, as a coach, all you can do is suggest things and give them some advice. You know, it's 50-50 that they'll take your lessons and run with it. Obviously, Al, the bottom line is it's the parents' job to teach their kids lessons in life, especially off the floor.
Right.
I think they should leave the coaching to us, and we'll leave the upbringing and the parenting to them. You know, the one main thing you want to look for is the character of a kid. Usually a good kid is a good teammate. You know, you want your best player to be the best teammate. You don't want the kid obviously getting into any kind of trouble. You want him to be a good student in school, you know, get a 2.8, 3.0 or higher. Because I firmly believe that, you know, the lessons at home are going to be the root of either the problem or the solution. So my only thing, tell our guys how to do it the right way. We always say play the right way.
Right. Now, Steve, I got to ask you, because I know a lot of kids come up from different backgrounds, and I'm sure, you know, during your coaching career so far, you've run into kids who really don't have that kind of structure at home to kind of teach them those values. Have you kind of brought any of those? Do you have any stories of bringing in a kid in who really didn't have that family structure at home and kind of being that mentor, not only in the game of basketball, but also as a mentor for them in life?
You know, before I got to East Lansing, I'll tell you one story. I had a kid down at Jackson Community College who grew up without a father. His single mom was never home. She was out working or she was out hanging out. So he basically raised himself as a teenager, and he was really rough around the edges. And he came to practice every day. He came to school every day. We gave him a golden opportunity. And the kid turned out to be a very good kid because I'd sit down with him often, and he had never heard these lessons before about doing the right thing, mainly treating women the right way. Because, you know, a lot of times these kids, they see their father at home or their dad who doesn't live there, you know, treat the women in their lives, you know, disrespectful. So we try to teach them, treat the women with respect. Treat, you know, your teacher, your coach, whatever it may be. Treat people with respect, and they'll treat you back. And the kid, like I said, Al, turned out to be a great kid.
Oh, that's great. Ladies and gents, we're talking with Steve Fenimore, head boys basketball coach over at East Lansing High School. So, Coach, how is the team looking for next season right now?
You know, Al, we lost a lot from last year. We lost a very good guard in Ahmad Newsom, who, you know, did a lot for us last year. We lost some senior leadership. And I'm not crying the blues, you know, because in high school it goes in cycles, you know. But we're going to be very young this year, Al. We're going to be very fast. We'll shoot the ball well from the outside. We will have no size, Al. We're probably going to see, when you watch us play, we'll probably have five guards out on the floor where we'll try to press, you know, turn the tempo up a little bit and run every chance we get.
Gotcha. That's all you can do when you don't have
Because
I remember talking to you at camp last week, and you told me that you're probably your biggest guy will probably be, I think, Akil Mitchell, right?
You know, I talked to Akil last night, and I said, listen, buddy, I know you're not much of a rebounder, but you got to turn into a rebounder this year because we're going to expect, you know, at least 8 to 10 boards a game from you.
Right. So when you talk about, you know, like I said, you have to – Akil is probably your biggest player on the team, and now you have to put him in a role that he's not too familiar with. How do you as a coach, Steve, go about making that transition in his play?
Well, you have to explain to them the benefit of rebounding and what it brings to the team, especially on the offensive end. Like, if he doesn't shoot the ball out in a possession, he needs to crash the offensive boards because there's a great opportunity for him to get a loose ball and to be able to score. And on the defensive end, you know, everybody thinks, oh, yeah, get a stop on defense.
Mm-hmm.
But defense isn't complete, Al, until you snatch or secure that defensive rebound. And that's what I'm trying to preach to Akil, especially if he wants to go on to play college basketball. You have to rebound the ball. Pat Riley once said, you know, no rebounds, no rings. So you try to explain to him the importance of rebounding the ball.
We are talking with Steve Fenimore, head basketball coach over at East Lansing High School, boys basketball coach over there. So, Steve, for those who are listening right now and may not be familiar with you, I don't know how. I mean, you're everywhere, man. But where did your passion come from? Let's go back to the roots of this thing. When did you start coaching, man?
Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, Al, and I started coaching at the age of 16. I coached a seventh grade middle school team, and then I advanced on to into the high school level in Brooklyn. And I was coaching high school ball out there for a couple of years. And in the early 90s, Al, I wanted to coach college basketball. So I went back to college. I got my degree at Central Michigan University. Mm-hmm. I was also able to spend 2 years at Michigan State as a student manager under Tom Izzo. The move from New York to Michigan in 1996-97 was a great move for me. And once I got into at the college level, Al, I really, really, you know, dove into it. Being under Tom Izzo for 2 years taught me so much about the craft, and that there's always something you can learn every single day as a coach. So what I do try to do, Al, just like history teachers and science teachers, they study their craft and get better, I do the same as a coach. And, you know, I got back to the high school level because, hey, Al, you know, coaching is coaching. You're teaching dribbling, you're teaching rebounding. Right. And I had some great coaches when I was coming up, when I was a young kid.
So for you, Steve, when you look at the difference between the college level and high school level, what's the difference in when you approach coaching at those levels? What's the different dynamic that you have to deal with when you look at those two areas of talent?
I think two things, Al. One is passion for the game. You know, in high school, I don't know if the kids really, I don't know if they have that passion like a college player does at first. It takes a little time to really understand if they have it or not, maybe by their sophomore or junior year. And also, Al, one thing in common with both is they both want to move on to the next level if they are passionate about the game.
Right.
And I will say this. If a high school kid has intentions of playing college basketball, he's really got to put a lot of work into it. And the same thing at the collegiate level. If you want to make it to the NBA or play in the D League or play overseas, you got to devote so much time to it, Al. And you know what? Mm-hmm. At the high school level, if a kid doesn't want to play college basketball, he just wants to go and be a traditional student in college, that's fine. But it's a great experience to be a high school athlete. The only thing I say, Al, is you got to give everything you have to it.
And that goes for anything in life. Ladies and gents, we're talking with Steve Finnemore, head boys basketball coach over at East Lansing High School. Now, Steve, there are many out there, and I've heard this chatter, and I'm sure you have possibly also. When you talk about AAU, a lot of people feel as though AAU basketball is a forum for individuals who are good at the high school level just to go out and get their points. Do you kind of echo those thoughts, or do you feel as though AAU basketball is good for high school basketball?
Al, I think it's good and bad. And the good is, if you get with a good program, Al, there's a lot of really fantastic coaches out there at the AAU level, believe it or not. There's a lot of good programs out there that do the right thing. If you can get with that kind of program, and if your parents have your best interest at heart and they put you in the hands of a good coach or good director, things will work out for you. Mm-hmm. A lot of players over the years have received a college scholarship playing in a tournament somewhere. But then again, it also has a dark side to it. You know, you have these kids now that are non-committed. What they do is they play for one team and one tournament, then they jump to another team, then they hop to another team.
Right.
So I think that's the bad part of it. There's no commitment there. And I think, Al, we talk about a lot of traits of kids today, and I think commitment is one that's really lacking. You know, a lot of AAU teams, they don't work on fundamentals. All they do is put the team together for some scrimmages, then go to a tournament.
Right.
And another downside to AAU basketball, they play three, sometimes four games in one day. And
wow.
every possession now, it's not valued as much as it would be for a 32-minute high school game on a Friday night. You know, it's like, you score on me, I'm going to get the ball, I'm going to go score on you. Oh, we lost the game, Al. We got another game at 3:00 in the afternoon. We got another game at 5:00 at night. We come, we come back tomorrow. Al, some of these kids so far, you know, AAU is big in the spring. Some of these kids already, Al, have played 40 basketball games thus far. Now they have July coming up where they'll play another 40 to 50 games. So
wow,
I think
they get burnt out, right? They just get burnt out after all that.
Big time. I think the main thing, the bad part about AAU, Al, is that the value of possessions and the value of winning and losing is diminished.
Wow. Very well put. Very well put. Man, because I was one of those kids when I was growing up who actually played AAU, and it just seemed like a circus sometimes. Like you said, I mean, these people have to realize these are high school kids, and to play them constantly, I mean, through AAU, I mean, I had no idea that we're playing like three games a day. That's crazy, man.
Al, it's sometimes on the second day of the tournament that they'll play four or five games because they have a bracket system.
Right.
And if you win, you keep advancing. You know, I've seen teams play five, sometimes six games in one day, And you look at the kids, their energy level is just – their tank is on E. And you have college coaches there watching the game, and, you know, out in Vegas in July and Florida and Texas.
Right.
And as a college coach, this is where the bad habits of the kids creep in. You know, they're slow on defense. They don't share the ball. They don't run. So probably the burnout in the summertime is big. And now the fundamentals. If you're going to play AAU basketball on the weekends, you better work on your fundamentals Monday through Thursday.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So with this whole AAU thing phenomenon that's going on right now, where they're playing these many games a day, has there been any talk of this being changed in the future?
You know, not that I know of, Al. I do know that the NCAA they try to, you know, sanction certain events. I know they've cut down on some of them, and a lot of times if it's not during the live period and if it's not sanctioned, a lot of kids won't go to these tournaments. All the big-time players want to play in front of the coaches. That the exposure is so important for a lot of these kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the NCAA and the High School Association will ever get on the same page and try to work something out. But, Al, you know, Jim Larrañaga, who's a friend of mine at the University of Miami,
mm-hmm.
he once told me, we had a nice discussion about AAU basketball.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Steve, what would you rather do? Have your kids hanging out on the street corner or hanging out in the malls, or would you rather have them, you know, at an AAU tournament getting better? So you got to look at it like that, too. At least the kids are staying busy.
Right. It's a catch-22, definitely.
Right.
So, all right, Steve, you know this is coming up. I know you are an NBA junkie just like me. If you follow Coach Finnemore on Twitter, ladies and gents, he's always tweeting about the games and the commentators, everything when it comes about to the NBA, even college basketball. He's a hoops freak like I am. So, Steve, what do you think about this NBA Finals series, especially that last game, Game 6 of the NBA Finals, which was arguably, in my mind, I've been on this earth for 22 years, and that was one of, if not the best NBA Finals game I've ever seen. It was historic, man. What do you think of this series right now, man?
You know, it's a fantastic series, obviously. We've seen everything in these six games out. We've seen blowouts. Both teams have won on the road. We've seen both teams win close games at the wire. You know, it's someone said this morning on TV, someone said, you know, the two best words in sports are game seven.
Right.
And tonight, I mean, it's going to be a fantastic game again. But, you know, the stats say that the home team wins, I think, the last 14 out of 17 or something like that.
Yeah.
So the Spurs are in a lot of trouble tonight because, you know what, they had a golden opportunity in game six, and I really felt bad for them. And Al, you know what, it was the little things that really hurt them the other night, like rebounding and missed free throws. So I'm really looking forward to a big game tonight, Al.
So when you look at that game, Steve, Greg Popovich, of course, is known as probably the best basketball coach in the NBA right now. And you look at a decision, because he's been catching a lot of flack for this, even though he is this, you know, he's a future Hall of Famer, of not putting Tim Duncan and Tony Parker in the game during that late stretch. He's been catching a lot of flack for that. Talk about that. I mean, what would you have done in that situation? Would you have, you're a coach, would you have sat down Tim Duncan with the way he had been playing the whole game and Tony Parker at the same time?
Well, the thing about Duncan, the Heat grabbed two offensive rebounds late in the game, and both of them led to kickouts for three-pointers. Without Duncan in there, obviously your rebounding goes down. But I read a story. The Spurs have been using this strategy all season long because – Al, when you run a high pick and roll and Duncan gets caught in a switch,
mm-hmm.
Their defense is put at a deficit. So I think that's Popovich's strategy. And Al, another thing, and I know it's your job to discuss it and dissect it and break it down, but
right.
it's so easy to second-guess a coach's decision. A coach has so many decisions, Al. You don't understand that. It's like a baseball manager. They have so many decisions that there's no one in the universe, in the history of coaching, Phil Jackson, anyone, you're going to be bound to make a few mistakes down the road.
Right. It happens. It happens. He is human, you know. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Steve Finnemore, head basketball coach over at East Lansing High School. So, Coach, who you got winning the whole thing tonight?
You know, I'm going for the San Antonio Spurs, but I think the Miami Heat are going to win because – and it has nothing to do with home court, the fans, because I'll tell you what – I was real disappointed in those Miami fans who left early the other night.
Yeah,
and
we're going to talk about that, yeah.
Al, this is one thing in sports, high school, college, pro, little league. I never have understood it my entire life. Why do people leave sporting events early? I just never understood that. Why even, like Chris said, Chris Bosh said it on record.
Right.
Don't come back to game seven. I mean, why do you even come to the game if you're not going to stay to the very end? I know
right.
they were down five with 28 seconds left, but, Al, it was those little things again. You know,
yeah.
And I really think, Al, Manu Ginobili got fouled on that one of those last drives.
Yeah.
He
get fouled.
He did travel. You're right about that. And I really think, Al, and here's another thing people talk about. Don't let the refs decide the game. Let the players decide the game. But I really think Danny Green got fouled on that last shot, and I think that foul is called in San Antonio.
Yeah, I think I could. You could definitely make a case for that too, man. It was a crazy game, though. Unbelievable,
yep.
man. So when you're watching, because I read your tweets all the time, Steve, of course, follow you on Twitter at Coach Finnemore. Follow Coach Finnemore. He's great, man. But when you watch guys like a Greg Popovich, and even locally, you talked about working with Tom Izzo.
Yep.
What things do you try to steal from them in order to make you a better coach?
Probably how he manages and how Coach Izzo manages personalities. I always say a basketball coach is like a movie director, mm-hmm. and the players are the actors and actresses on the screen. You know, you as a coach have to put the guys in a position to succeed, you know, whether it's running a play or whether it's, you know, giving somebody a positive push or something like that. And I think Greg Popovich is the best at managing personalities. And I've been around Tom Izzo a long time. And the way he manages people is just he could write a book about it. So
right.
I kind of look for little things like that. You know, I look at teams. If a team shares the ball out and if they play tough defense and play with a lot of energy, and if you got guys jumping off the bench, high-fiving the guys coming off the bench, I think that's a sign of a great coach.
Yeah, well, those are some definitely great things to take away from those guys. Now, another thing, Coach, before I let you go,
yep.
You talk a lot about the hashtag foul or defend.
Yep.
Now, for those of you who are listening and don't know what foul or defend means, Coach Finnemore has been following basketball situations where a team is either down by three or up by three, I should say, and the other team has the ball, time is winding down, whether or not that team should foul and give them two free throws and not even a chance at the three-pointer, or should they just play it up and defend it and make the best defensive effort to try and stop that shot? Coach, what has your research led you to?
Well, in the NBA, 23% of the time when a team does not foul, the team with the ball on offense makes a three to tie the game. 23%. That's 23. Pretty high.
Yeah, yeah,
now,
it is.
Now, the thing with the Spurs the other night, here's the thing you got to look at. The Spurs have been in that situation five times this season. And Greg Popovich is a guy that will not foul. There are certain coaches.
Right.
There are certain coaches that foul. Doc Rivers of the Boston Celtics. Well, I mean, last I heard, he was still with the Celtics.
Yeah,
he
right.
fouls. They were in a situation six times this year, and he fouls every single time. And when Chris Bosh got that last offensive rebound right outside the lane, the Spurs had a chance to wrap him up, and that's what you got to do. You got to wrap the guy up before he can get his arms up to shoot the ball. And Bosh was able to throw it out, and that's when Ray Allen made that three. You know, it's just a philosophy, Al. There's mm-hmm. no right or wrong answer. Obviously, 77% of the time the defense prevailed, but it's a great, great study I did this past year. You know, at the college level, I think it was like 90% of teams that fouled won the game. Only one or two teams, you know, lost the game.
90%, so, wow.
How about that? That's incredible.
Man.
But there are guys who just won't foul, Al, because, you know, there are a couple of things that can go wrong. But,
right.
you know, like I said, Al, and outside shooting, you got to be real careful, because if a guy gets into his active shooting and you foul him and he makes it, oh, boy, then you got a four-point player on your hands and you're in big trouble.
Yes, you are. All right, so, Coach, last question. So you're playing Waverly. You're up by three. Time is ticking. What are you doing, man?
We are fouling. We are fouling because I was burnt twice 2 years ago by Holt.
Right.
They made a three to send the game into OT. And this year, believe it or not, I wasn't in that situation. So, you know,
right.
it's just my philosophy, and everybody has a different philosophy. And now one thing real quick on this series tonight.
Yeah.
Look at the outside shooting tonight. Look at guys who make those threes because, you know, the Heat were on fire the other night. Danny Green was off. The team was off. So
mm-hmm.
look for guys to make three-pointers tonight. And those guys are going to win the game.
Hey, thanks a lot, Steve. I would definitely be watching everything tonight. It should be a very entertaining game. There it is, head boys basketball coach over at East Lansing High School, Steve Finnemore. Thanks so much for joining Current Sports, Steve.
You're welcome, Al. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot. You too, man.
Bye.
All right, when we return to Current Sports, we will dive into our Current Sports section of the show. Remind you all that we'll be taking your calls at 140. Don't hesitate to pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527. Let us hear your thoughts on any of today's topics. We want to hear what's on your mind. Stay tuned. More Current Sports is next.
Sarah Dunant digs through dusty archives and library stacks to research her tales of the Italian Renaissance.
The trick, and probably the most difficult bit, has been finding the stories that make the history look effortless.
Her next act, On the Borgias, opened to glowing reviews in London. I'm Neil Conan, Sarah Dunant on her new novel, Blood and Beauty. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 p.m.
I'm WKAR's Mark Bayshore. 7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat. From government to the arts, sports to education, from business to travel, it's all got a home. It's Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 FM and at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
The save was made by Crawford there. Seidenberg saw that one squirt on through. Taken on by Kane. Shooting, and that ricocheted off Rath. Bickle tries to play, and that one is blocked by Bergeron. Kept along with Siebert. Threaten. Score! The Blackhawks have won it!
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports, giving you all of the latest sporting news concerning Mid-Michigan. And as you just heard, what a NHL Stanley Cup Finals game last night. Man, just to remind you all, we'll be taking your calls at 140-517-355-9527. Give us a call. Anything that's on your mind, we will talk about it. We'll get to the Stanley Cup Finals in just a minute. Some of the biggest news right now in Mid-Michigan, or Michigan period, excuse me, is the Detroit Red Wings announcing a $650 million plan for a new arena in Detroit's downtown entertainment and sports district. Praise Jesus on this one. I've been waiting for this for so long. Of course, we all love Joe Louis Arena. It's a great arena. It's very historic. But man, the Red Wings, $650 million. That's got to get your blood boiling, get the excitement going out in Motown and in Michigan, period. It will be built on the north end of downtown Detroit. That will help create one of the largest concentrations of major sports facilities in any U.S. city. Yes, this is going to be a beauty. Now, the paperwork still has to be filed. At the end of this year, they expect all the paperwork to be filed and to get things rolling. So this happened yesterday, of course, and they approved the framework of the deal with the Illich family, Illich family's Olympia Develop Organization, exactly, to build the new complex on the west side of Woodward Avenue, just north of I-75, not far from Comerica Park, where Mike Illich, he owns the Detroit Tigers as well. So when completed, the 18,000-seat arena, along with Comerica Park and Ford Field, home of the Detroit Lions, would bring all of Detroit's major sports teams, with the exception of the Detroit Pistons. I really hope the Pistons get a venue one day downtown. That'd be really cool, just to have the Tigers, the Pistons. I hope they get down there. The Red Wings, I mean, all of that, the Lions, all of that in one area right downtown. Man, that would be something to see one day. But you know, this is a move in the right direction as far as the Red Wings are concerned. Getting out of Joe Louis Arena and building this incredible venue, it looks like. So the multi-purpose arena will be a part of the $650 million complex and district that would include spinoff housing, retail, office, and parking. Man, in the area they're trying to build it, they're tearing down a lot of abandoned buildings within that area, and just really downtrodden spots of Detroit, downtown Detroit to be exact, to build this arena. So the plan calls for a walkable district, you know, not an arena surrounded by parking lots. Now, private money will pay for about 56% of the total cost of the new project, with 44% coming from public sources. And so just to give you an idea of where the money is coming. So the deal is tentative right now, as I said earlier, then the paperwork is expected to be finished by the end of this year. So that's exciting, guys. I can't wait to see that. Detroit Red Wings moving from the Joe $650 million project plan for a new arena. That's very exciting. All right, let's move on to the Detroit Tigers. The Detroit Tigers lose a 2-1, 3-game series to the Baltimore Orioles yesterday. The Tigers were beat. Man, and they got just, not even beat, they got just, oh, just ugly. 13-3 yesterday. Rick Porcello on the mound, he allowed 6 runs on 9 hits, giving up a pair of homers for the third time this year. And Chris Davis, who has been just amazing this season, he continues to have the hot bat. He hit 2 homers, 1 in the 4th inning and 1 in the 9th inning, and he leads the league with now 26 homers. Man, unbelievable. Now, Baltimore improved to a season-high 11 games over 500. This is their 7th series win, including 2 against, yes, the Tigers, in a month to prevent the AL-leading Boston. That's right, Boston, from building a big lead in the East. So, we got to bring up this, too. Jose Valverde, guys, he struggled yet again, yielding 4 runs and 5 hits in the 9th. His days are, I think it's safe to say that his days are numbered right now in Detroit. If he keeps this up, I think he's only got 1, maybe 2 more strikes. If not, this might have just done it. I don't know. But Jose Valverde is just really, really struggling. So Baltimore, they're currently 1.5 games in back of Boston and AL East, and the Tigers have a 3.5 game lead over the Cleveland Indians in the AL Central, and they now open a 4-game series against the Boston Red Sox. Hey, and guess who will be starting tonight? Just take a guess. All right, Jose Alvarez. Yes, man, if you remember this guy, his first major league start, he was terrific. Gave up only 1 run and 3 hits, struck out 7 over 6 innings with a 4-1 win over the Indians on June 9th. I remember raving about this guy. Unbelievable. Now, Detroit purchased the 24-year-old's contract from the AAA minor league for that start in place of injured Anibal Sanchez. Now, that sent him back to the minors right after that, but he really, really impressed the Tigers organization with his outing. But with Sanchez landing on the disabled list Monday with a strained shoulder, Alvarez has been called for another start. So that he'll be starting tonight as the Tigers take on the Red Sox. And the Red Sox, who actually lead baseball with 373 runs, they're 44-30 right now. So Jose Alvarez, that should be exciting to see him on the mound. This 24-year-old kid, if tonight's game and tonight's outing for him is anything like his opening outing, this should be fun to watch. So, all right, NHL Finals, ladies and gents. Chicago Blackhawks have tied up the Stanley Cup Finals at 2 games apiece against the Boston Bruins with a 6-5 thriller in overtime last night. It was certainly exciting to watch. Goals everywhere again, 6-5, ladies and gents. That's a lot of goals. Unusual for this series because if you look at the first 2 series, neither one of these games had been anywhere close to how last night's was. And when you look at a fast-paced game like this, it really goes in favor of the Chicago Blackhawks. They're used to this fast-paced style of offense and or game, I should say. Boston is not. So if you play a fast-paced game like this, Chicago has the upper hand. They showed it last night, even though it was just a 6-5 overtime win. And guess who scored the goal? Brent Seabrook. That's right. He had a slap shot to beat Tuukka Rask with 9:51 to go in overtime. Now, Seabrook, yes, that name rings a bell because he's also the hero in the Red Wings series in OT of that Game 7 this year. Now, if you look at that goal, it doesn't get scored if you look at Jonathan Toews and the incredible screen that he put in the front of the net to kind of free up space for Brent to get that puck through. Unbelievable goal. And now we have a great series that we cannot sleep on. The NHL Finals, certainly exciting. Here's Brent Seabrook, after the game.
I like shooting in that spot, but to be honest, I was just trying to get past the centerman or their forward coming out and trying to block it. They do such a good job of blocking shots and getting in the way and getting in lanes. So I just tried getting past the first guy, and I thought, all the forwards on the ice, I think Kaner made a great play putting it on net, and Bixie tried getting it there, and it bounced around a little bit, and our forwards did a good job of getting in front and boxing out, and it's just a great play.
Yes, that was Brent Seabrook on his goal, game-winning goal in overtime of last night's thrilling game, really, 6-5 win in OT, just getting it past Tuukka Rask. Now, coming into this game, the Blackhawks had only scored 5 goals total in the first 3 games of the series and hadn't gotten the puck past Rask in more than 129 minutes going into Game 4. Now, this is the third overtime game in the finals. This is exciting stuff. I mean, games going into overtime, guys really battling. It's an exciting NHL Finals, ladies and gents. Now, the teams combined for 5 goals in the second period, as many as in Game 2 and Game 3 combined. I don't know if we'll ever get a game like this moving on in the NHL Finals, but it was fun to watch. This was a jewel. And Chicago just back and forth. Chicago repeatedly sprinting into the lead, and only to have Boston just coming right back at them and scoring right back, and to keep this thing going. So now Corey Crawford, something I noticed, Corey Crawford, he really kept getting beat glove side. If you look at most of those goals, it happened on glove side of Corey Crawford. So it makes you wonder right there. Maybe they found a weak spot with Corey. I don't know. But he made key saves at key times. And that's why Chicago walked out with that win. All right, let's move on. NBA Finals. Yes, we just finished talking with Steve Finnemore, head boys basketball coach over at East Lansing High School, about this series. Surely an exciting one. Of course, that Game 6 was incredible. One of the best NBA Finals games of all time. And I'm sure I don't have to remind you all that it's tonight, 9 p.m., Spurs and Heat. Spurs trying to bounce back after that heartbreaking 103-100 loss. And something very interesting that Steve Finnemore talked about at the beginning of the hour was fans leaving in the fourth quarter when it looked, quote-unquote, looked to be out of reach. It was only a 5-point game, like a minute left, and fans are leaving and leaving the arena thinking the thing is over. And you just missed one of the most incredible shots in NBA Finals history with Ray Allen hitting that 3 to push him to overtime. And then what took place with LeBron James and his headband flying off and his heroics. I mean, it was an incredible game, and fans missed it because they leave the arena. So Chris Bosh had a message. Chris Bosh says, quote, "For all of you guys who left, make sure you don't come to Game 7. Yo." Yo, he didn't say yo. I just threw that in there, end quote. Chris Bosh really upset about it, and I don't blame the guy, to be honest with you. I mean, you're supposed to be a loyal fan. This is what separates the loyal fans from the bandwagon fans, because I hate it, because I'm a Detroit Pistons fan, and I ride or die with my team. I ride or die with the Detroit Pistons, win or lose, and I hate if the Pistons are having a great season. Like in 2004, I go back to 2004 when the Pistons went all the way to the finals. Guys who weren't even Pistons fans whatsoever talking them down, they go to the finals, and all of a sudden, the whole city of Detroit's hopping on the bandwagon, which is not surprising. It happens all the time in sports. But as a loyal fan, you hate that. And people walking out of this game, when it was only a 5-point game at that, I don't blame the Heat for being mad. And I agree with those Chris Bosh comments, to tell you the truth. So LeBron James said, quote, "I apologize to our fans from last night." This is the day after that game. And he said, "But that's why the game is played and all the way to the zeros. As a fan and people watching at home, I know it had to, and then he goes on and on, blah, blah, blah. But fans leaving, that's really annoying. We're going to talk about that later on, too, when the fellas get in the studio. But, all right, Aaron Hernandez, really a crazy story right now. Investigators searched Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez's home out in North Attleboro, Massachusetts, home Tuesday in connection with the death of a man who police said was an associate of Hernandez's. and now a plan to search a rental car registered to the New England Patriots tight end. Now, reports have come out since then that have really kind of put Aaron Hernandez in talks of he's actually being sued by an individual for shooting a man in the face. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but apparently they were in the car. They got into it or something. Aaron Hernandez, he takes out his gun, points it at the guy. Yes, he points it at the guy. And it goes off accidentally. And the guy, he puts up his hand to kind of block the blow from the bullet. And he ends up hitting his face. He lived, thank God. But really just idiot. I mean, Aaron Hernandez, who saw this coming to? And Aaron Hernandez is a really solid. So I really like him with the Patriots. But, I mean, just another case of an athlete being involved in a situation that he should not be involved in. I mean, I really don't get this. So, interesting story. As time moves on, we'll keep you updated day by day on this crazy story with Aaron Hernandez. Now, during the shirts on Tuesday that lasted hours, two friends of Hernandez who were in the house who tried to leave, they were stopped by state police at the end of the driveway. Crime scene investigators later searched the car. The men attempted to leave, but they were also questioned and searched. So we'll see how this one turns out, guys. And another story that we meant to update you yesterday, but we got so engulfed in the whole NBA Finals discussion. Allen Iverson abducts children. Yes, TMZ reported that the ex-wife of retired NBA star Allen Iverson has accused him of abducting their five children. Now, Allen Iverson denies those allegations in his own set of legal documents, but his ex-wife, she filed court papers saying that Iverson asked for permission and to take the children, and when they agreed on a return date, once that return date had passed and the children didn't show up, she said she tried to organize an exchange, another exchange on June 4th, but he failed to show up. Now, Tawana, that's his ex-wife's name, Tawana has sole legal and primary physical custody of the five children, and she's also concerned for the kids' safety due to Iverson's alleged alcohol abuse. Really hate hearing stuff like this about Allen Iverson. I heard a few months ago that he actually filed for bankruptcy. Allen Iverson's not doing well, and it's so amazing because this is a guy that I used to look up to when I played ball back in high school and elementary school, and Allen Iverson was the man. And to see him in his situation now is really weird, to tell you the truth. Weird is the word I would use because when you say Allen Iverson, I still think of the AI back in the day with the Sixers who was, oh man, he was the second coming of Isaiah Thomas. Unbelievable. So I hope he gets his stuff together. But yeah, that's what's going on with AI. Also, lastly but not least, Jay-Z is now licensed. That's right. Jay-Z, Rod Berkowitz, a spokesman for Roc Nation Sports, confirmed to ESPN that as of this week, Jay-Z, the rapper businessman, is now licensed to work as an NBA agent. And he's not certified, though. He's just certified with the National Basketball Players Association, but he's not certified yet with the NFL. Now, the first NBA player Jay-Z is expected to sign officially is Oklahoma City Thunder star Kevin Durant. Durant has not made any kind comment yet, but man, this could really change the game. How cool would that be if you're an athlete and you look at a guy like Jay-Z, who's this hip-hop mogul, this cultural icon, and he's now a sports agent, and you could sign with him and be a part of the whole, you know, Roc Nation crew. That'd be really cool, man. That's hard to compete with other sports agents out there. I mean, that's a lot of publicity. It looks good. Jay-Z might mention you in a rap song. You never know, man. That's really cool stuff. So Jay-Z is now licensed. Man, I feel bad for a lot of sports agents out there. All right, I want to note that Wednesday, Tiger Woods announced that he will be unable to return to defend his title in the AT&T National. Now, he's saying that his strained left elbow, if you watched during the U.S. Open, he really bothered it. It bothered him last week, and he struggled over the weekend, fell out of contention. Though he does plan to travel from his Florida home and support the event, which is both run by and supports the Tiger Woods Foundation. Now, this marks the third time in the past 6 years he won't be able to play, leaving the field without its marquee attraction. And I tell you, when I did some research on this, and when Tiger Woods is not playing on the weekend, man, golf ratings are like, it's terrible. They go down like 50, 60%. It's unbelievable, man. I know I won't be watching that much. I'll still have to keep up with it. It's my job. But With Tiger Woods not being in it, man, it's like ho-hum, you know. I don't know. All right, and Serena Williams, she has apologized for comments she made in a forthcoming interview in which she appeared to assign blame to the 16-year-old victim in the Steubenville, Ohio rape case. Now, the victim, of course, if you guys go back, she accused two Ohio high school American football players of raping her while she was drunk at a party and testified that she didn't remember what happened. And this happened in the early hours of August 12th of last year. And she says she was assaulted. Serena, you know, made some comments that were printed in Rolling Stone saying, you know, maybe she brought it on herself. You know, she shouldn't have been in that situation, blah, blah, blah. But she released comments saying she apologized for those comments. And she says, quote, "For someone to be raped at only 16 is such a horrible tragedy for both families involved, that of the rape victim and of the accused. I am currently reaching out to the girl's family to let her know that I am deeply sorry for what was written in the Rolling Stone article." All right, ladies and gents. Well, we have to move on to our last segment of Current Sports. We're taking your calls about any of the topics discussed today. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Hit me up on Facebook.com/Current Sports. Tweet me a question, Al Martin, WKR. We want to hear from you. Stick around. More Current Sports is next.
The Obama campaign able to beat Mitt Romney in 2012? Journalist Jonathan Alter says it was in part by ignoring the human desire not to be irritating with online fundraising appeals. On the next Fresh Air, Alter talks about what he calls the most consequential election of recent times. His new book is The Center Holds. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock.
Every weekday afternoon at 4, All Things Considered keeps you up to date on current events nationally and around the world. I inform you on what's happening at the state and local levels. Hi, I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered. Join me as we stay on top of the things that matter to you on All Things Considered, weekdays from 4 until 6 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. During the last segment of today's show, we're going to mix things up a bit and introduce a new segment. Throwback Thursdays, ladies and gents. It's a segment where we kind of give you what happened on this day in sports history in the world of sports. So it's going to be interesting. I'm joined by my production assistants, Alex Sharg and Matt Lutke, and my intern, Mike Corey. It should be pretty fun, guys, and we'll also talk about the standings in which, man, Matt is just wait till you hear him. Have you heard him, Matt?
I got a little glimpse of him, and I'm not going to get too cocky,
man,
because there's still time.
I'm like angry. It's like irking me right now, but he's doing his thing. But anyway, all right, Mike, Throwback Thursdays, what happened on this June 20th, 2013, in the history of sports.
Yeah, many significant events took place. Yeah, many significant. We'll go way, way back to 1936. This was before the Berlin Olympics. Jesse Owens set the 100-meter record at 10.2 seconds.
Historic.
I'm just going to run through a couple of these, and we can discuss them afterwards. In 1967, Muhammad Ali was convicted in Houston of violating selective service laws by refusing to be drafted. U.S. Supreme Court would later overturn that decision. The Chicago Bulls in 1993 won their third consecutive NBA title, solidifying themselves as the dynasty of the 1990s by defeating the Phoenix Suns and Charles Barkley in Game 6 at a score of 99-98. And, of course, O.J. Simpson pled innocent to the killings of his wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and Ronald Goldman. And, like we all know, 3 days prior to that, June 17th, had the famous white Ford Bronco chase through the highway of Los Angeles and everything.
If it doesn't fit, you must have quit.
Absolutely.
All right. Go ahead. Those are significant. Let's discuss those.
And one more, too, is Robert Duran won a 15-round decision over Sugar Ray Leonard in 1980. It was his first defeat in 28 fights for Leonard.
Wow. A lot happened.
A wide swath of things, too, both on the field and off. Thanks to OJ there.
Yes. My goodness, guys. Well, I guess we can talk about, well, first of all, Jesse Owens, really a guy who really – as far as African-American sports go, really broke a lot of barriers and became an icon, cultural icon in the world of sports. He was unbelievable. So that's very significant there. I mean, you talk about Ali refusing to today was the day he refused to go.
It was the day he was convicted.
Today was the day he was convicted of not going over to Vietnam to fight. So, man, significant stuff, man. When you look at all these things, it makes you wonder, like, wow. You know, this day is unbelievable. I didn't even know until we were sitting here like, all right, well, let's see what happened today. Probably not a lot. And then all of a sudden, all of these stories.
You would think they'd all be in the vein of the Bulls winning a title just because, you know, all these sports end in June now. But, yeah, a lot of socially significant things, whether it's Owens, OJ, or
any of those.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, just a lot of stuff going on. A nice wide swath of things. But the OJ thing. We might, if we wait a few more days, this Aaron Hernandez story might turn into another one. Is he gonna take off in like a RAV4 or something?
It's unbelievable.
Well, there are a lot more better built cars nowadays. He might take off in something a little more faster.
Right, that's true. But
and it's something so crazy because when you look at this Aaron Hernandez story, I mean, this literally came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
out of nowhere, and for him to be in a situation, I mean, he pulls out a gun. And points it at the guy who's sitting in the car with him. I mean, what do you, like, dude? What is your problem, man? Like, this I can't believe that. And the guy who's kind of going at and suing Aaron Hernandez is saying that the gun wasn't even registered to him. I mean, it was illegal possession of the gun as well. So, I mean, this could turn out really, really ugly for him.
Yeah, and it just seems like the more and more stuff that comes out, the worse it starts to look. Yeah. Every new piece of information is a little bit deeper of a hole that he's digging. So
sounds just like Pac-Man last week.
Oh man, don't even get me started on Pac-Man. I could go on and on about that guy. But Pac-Man, you know, I believe Cincinnati has allowed him to talk at the camp and give his inspirational messages.
He's given the keynote speech. Yeah, he gave it last year, I believe. And they're
bringing him back because he was pretty good.
What do you think about that?
About the speech? About
the image of Pac-Man Jones giving a speech to a team.
Isn't it the rookie class? At the rookie symposium.
So, and it's,
yeah. Well, if anybody knows how to get himself in trouble, it seems like Pac-Man Jones is the guy.
Yeah, he should have a lot of advice on what not to do.
Here's what not to do.
Exactly, because he's done it all. Yep. He's still doing it. For goodness sake. So Pac-Man is just a mess. But guys, going back to – so MJ, recap with Michael Jordan today. Today's the day.
Today was the day that the Chicago Bulls in 1993 won their third straight NBA title, the first three-peat that they did.
Right.
And, of course, that led eventually, you know, later on after his father was killed.
Yeah, he went to baseball.
He retired, went to baseball, played for the Chicago White Sox, as everyone knows.
The minor league team,
And the Chicago, you know, struggled a little bit. They did okay, you know.
A little bit.
Scottie Pippen helped.
I thought you were talking about Jordan and baseball.
That struggled a lot. Yeah, okay. Also, the Bulls then eventually came back and won another 3-peat and everything, and just, you know, solidified the team as the team of the 90s.
In light of, you know, this whole NBA Finals is going on with LeBron James, who is the, let's just face it, he's the best player of our time right now. And you look at everyone's compared to Michael Jordan.
Right.
I want to get your guys' thoughts on what do you feel? Do you feel as though anyone will ever come close to the cultural sports figure and icon that Michael Jordan became when he was playing, when he came to the NBA? And do you think LeBron has that potential of doing that?
It's tough because I feel like Jordan was the first guy to have a personal brand. You know, and as big as LeBron gets, because, like, all the things you hear about LeBron is that he wants to be, like, the first billionaire athlete. He wants to be, like, the first billionaire basketball player, a big brand and stuff like that. But it's just, like, you know, you're never going to be that first guy. And, you know, he does have a chance to win a bunch more titles, you know, regardless of where he goes in 2014, if he stays with Miami or goes back to Cleveland, which everybody's talking about, or, you know, anything that he does, he has a chance to win a lot more titles. But, I mean, Jordan's always going to be the guy, the top guy. He is right. He is the top dog.
And just nobody's going to – like, during Jordan's time, there was nobody more, like, universally beloved in the game than Jordan. LeBron – that is not LeBron.
No, that's a very good point.
He is very polarized. He's a very polarizing figure, has been for the past couple of years. But Jordan, like, when he left his last game in Washington, he got a standing ovation for however, like, 10 minutes, whatever.
It was unbelievable.
In Philadelphia.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen with LeBron.
No, and that's the thing. When you look at Michael Jordan, and he was that athlete that came around – and really, like you said, Mike, I mean, everybody liked him. You could be, you know, from in China. You could be in another state in the United States.
You really loved him. It was documented in the Dream Team documentary.
Yeah,
when you
I mean,
saw
everybody
when
loved
over,
Mike. Right, and yeah, it was like it was a phenomenon games. when he's coming off the bus. Everybody's going nuts about him. I mean, Michael Jordan to me. I mean, when you talk about the shoes, he was the first guy with the big shoe contract and really took that to another level as far as endorsements go. I mean, this guy, I mean, Michael Jackson had him in music videos.
Well, I mean, how are we forgetting Space Jam?
Right, Space Jam.
Until LeBron makes the sequel to Space Jam, he's got nothing on
MJ. He's got
MJ.
Nothing on MJ.
That's a great top five we could do. Like, NBA basketball players and movies. You got Shaquille O'Neal
Shazam. Would not make my top five. Kazam was
he got
terrible.
Kevin Durant in Thunderstruck.
Oh, my gosh.
I've never seen that.
No one has.
Well, guys,
you guys have seen it.
I haven't even seen a trailer. I just know about it.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Well, guys, here's another angle I look at it about LeBron. When you compare LeBron to Jordan, does LeBron have the potential to be as great as LeBron, as great as Jordan? I think he does because if you look at Jordan, sure, he was unstoppable. He hit so many shots. But LeBron, like you said, we've talked about it all this week. When LeBron drives the hole one-on-one, he's so big and he's so physically daunting that you can't stop him. Was Jordan that physically big? I don't think
Jordan was a very – as far as – when you talk about a shooting guard, Jordan – a lot of people don't forget that Jordan was so strong. I mean, during his later career and when he came back with the team, he was unbelievable. You always bring up a debate that I really want to go at you with, Alex. When we got 1 minute left, I cannot get anything in.
Reflection Fridays. That's why we got
– I'm going at you tomorrow, man, because I really want to go into that
topic.
Another
question I like to have is who's better, Kareem? Or Michael, because I think
Jordan to me.
Kareem was dominant.
Kareem was great.
Kareem was the most unstoppable player, but Jordan might be the most dominant, if that makes any difference. But you know,
definitely, we're gonna dive into this guys tomorrow. All right, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports: Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky, production assistants; my intern Mike Corey; engineer Aaron Young; Peter Wharf, station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Steve Finnemore for coming on today's show. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Same time, same place tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Be easy, people.